or maybe I jumped ahead one. So yeah, the one in blue here, yes. The map app was the main tool that was used in terms of getting feedback on the project, in addition to lots of public outreach in-person events all throughout the city. We did receive about 900 comments specifically on the TSB projects. People were able to click on a specific project and give their feedback. And we did then include in the scoring of projects ones that had higher public support, were able to work their way up. The other thing that was really useful with the public support is we were also able to get feedback on ways of rescoping the projects so that they could be more financially achievable. So in Southwest, for instance, Marianne led Sweeney folks through a pretty robust conversation around how to rescope some of these projects that we just haven't been able to get to, such as Capitol Highway. Is there a way that we can reduce the cost of those projects to make them more accomplished? So the next slide shows the Transportation Deficiency Index. So this was used to score projects that are sort of dealing with issues of connectivity, of pedestrian and bike access, and as well as safety improvements and places where there's substandard streets. So the projects that are remedying those areas with high deficiencies receive additional scores. One more slide. Equity was also a key factor in this. And so we specifically were scoring projects based on their ability to help improve the mobility of places where there's higher incidence of people of color, lower incomes, youth, and older adults. And so those projects also achieved higher scorings through that. The access to employment and the access to...
I don't want to get too far down in the weeds, but maybe later. I'm puzzled by some of the projects I see on the map. For example, Inner Division, we just did that. So
that should be listed as a funded project, so that by color it will be showing it as a... I think this is part of the Palo Division Transit investment. So that may
not
be
the part down by Lads Edition. We just redesigned and rebuilt that street. So I'm not sure why we would have it on a project list.
I think at the time of this, the Inner Division was part of the potential corridor for the Division Fast Link, is my guess. So Division Fast Link, which is the overall project that is in the TSP, I think may still be showing up in this location because the alignment hadn't been refined at the time when we were doing this analysis. But we can look into that.
I'd be curious if just, come back to Foster, we funded and designed a remodel of Foster from Powell to Lentz.
There are some projects that are still in this list that, because they weren't finaled by the time this was done, we kept them in.
Yeah. Just asterisk that for later.
Because we've accomplished it, that's great news. So, yeah. Right. This very colorful map is an example of the analysis we did in terms of access to work and access to education. So this is specifically looking at East Portland and where East Portlanders work, but showing specifically the types of projects that can help make the connections between East Portland and those locations were also prioritized within the process. The red shows where they're working. So a really strong connection to the Clackamas Industrial Area as well as to Columbia Corridor, for instance, and out by the airport, but also, obviously, connections farther afield as well. Yeah, Clackamas Industrial Area. I think that is OHSU. Yeah.
And this is a pattern that we talked a little bit about in the employment discussion the other day, is that it's surprising how few of the East Portland residents are working downtown, for example.
It would be interesting to contrast this with other areas to find out, in fact, maybe not quite as many people work downtown. And then looking at it, what you really need is transit that goes north-south and not downtown.
Correct, and that's, I think, why Andre's nodding. This has been a key message that he's been saying, and that's why we wanted to highlight this specific map, is showing that that's something that we definitely have heard and are rewarding the projects that help us do that work. Yeah. All right, next slide. Going back to kind of the beginning of our conversation, we need to support the prosperity and the functionality of centers in particular, if that is our growth strategy. So we specifically looked at access and mobility connections to those centers. And so this is in white, you can see the various centers. and then see where the transportation investments relate to those centers. So specifically, projects that were making connections to and between centers were also ranked higher within the overall process. But not all centers are the same, as we know. And in particular, and I think this is a graphic that you've seen before, probably earlier on in your conversation around growth, is there are certain centers that are projected to be growing very, very rapidly over the next 20 years, but also have deficiencies today. And so those top right centers, in particular those that are out in East Portland, are centers that we need to pay particular care for and make sure that we are making them complete through this investment strategy. So those are the specific ones. So it says that the key down below, the orange circles indicate those centers that have a higher than average concentration of vulnerable residents. And so mapping those, it is a very useful lens in terms of understanding. And so mapping them, the next page you see, this is a map of the TSP project investments and how they intersect with those, in particular East Portland centers. And so you can see how those investments help with health outcomes, with equity outcomes, as well as those access outcomes. So this is one where those investments scored well on a number of different criteria based on the growth and the deficiencies that they're experiencing. This relates back to, the next slide relates back to Commissioner Fritz's commentary earlier around transportation costs. So the average transportation cost of our residents also was incorporated into the evaluation, and looking at how can these investments really reduce the cost of transportation for these households. So you'll see that areas of Southwest and sort of both outer Southeast and outer Northeast pop on this map as having a cost above average for transportation. And so the investments that we make in terms of bicycle and walking and transit investments all can help reduce the costs of the transportation within a household budget.
Yep. Do we have a target goal we want to be at in terms of average transportation cost? Like we do for housing, you don't want to spend more than 30% of your income?
We have a 50% combined housing and transportation costs, and you usually think around 30%, so it's around 20, but...
Thank you. This shows the bar charts. Specifically shows across various modes where the City of Portland's investments are targeted. You see we're trying to follow through on the policy direction received from the comp plan, so we're really focused in on projects that supporting all modes, supporting bicycle and pedestrian mobility and freight mobility and transit as the places where we're investing. And you can see the investments by other agencies are primarily focused on transit, freight, and freeway investments. Some of them are all modes, so we're in the blue, sort of filling in where we think we need to really support those policy directions from the comprehensive plan.
What does the comprehensive plan say about the Columbia River crossing?
I'll punt a little bit to these guys. So the comprehensive plan, I believe, is silent on the specifics of the CRC. It is still in the regional transportation plan, and so at this point now, I think we're waiting for that conversation to be resolved regionally, but I think I'll let Chris talk a little more.
Yeah, I think we might have been happy to take it out, but we were told by staff if we did that, we'd be out of compliance with the regional plans, and it would get sent back to us to fix ultimately. But we did, and Andre provided the leadership on this, and I'll let him comment. We did add a study of developing mobility options from Portland to Hayden Island, because that's a big piece of what the CRC was to deliver, that it's not, and we still have that problem as a city of taking care of our citizens on Hayden Island. And I think it's interesting that former Metro President David Bragdon was in town recently talking about some of the problems he sees in transportation planning in Oregon, and one of the things he pointed out was letting the state highway departments lead the CRC was probably a mistake. It's an urban transportation project. The cities probably ought to be in charge. So in some ways, this study is our bid to get the city to take a more proactive involvement in figuring out what we should do since that project isn't going anywhere. I'll let Andre add to that if he wants.
No, I think Chris said it best. We didn't take it out, but we really emphasized what do we do for multiple modes to get to Hayden Island long term, and not sure what those options are, but to at least engage in a study that gets us some options on the table.
All right, so next slide. This actually circles back around to an early conversation as well, understanding the coordination with TriMet and Portland Streetcar Incorporated is very, very important to supporting the projected growth, in part because a lot of those transit investments are implemented by others or with the support of others. So we did develop and execute a intergovernmental agreement, a letter of intent, essentially between us and TriMet to demonstrate our collaboration moving forward. And then we're a very active participant in the service enhancement planning process with TriMet. And we have the ongoing coordinative work with Portland Streetcar through the permanent executive group that was formed out of the master agreement that the council adopted a couple years ago with Portland Streetcar. And so it's very specifically looking at how transit service can be increased within these key centers and between them, as well as what access to transit investments we can be making in terms of pedestrian and bicycle infrastructure to make those connections. The major projects at the bottom, are very specifically to Southwest Corridor and Powell Division are sort of a lot of the big ones. We are right now through TGM grants, Transportation Growth Management grants, doing two different efforts, one of them looking at that sort of co-investment between us and TriMet in terms of where we would produce access to transit and better zoning to support vibrant places, and TriMet would reward us with better service in those locations, as well as a specific evaluation of those inner and outer corridors. We're just beginning that to look at where the right investments might be for that.
So pound on that nail just a little longer, and that is, I want one of my goals for this plan is to make sure that, let's take 82nd again, that if we're going to confer the benefit of significantly higher density to the property owners along 82nd, we're also going to have some expectations in return that we will have developed a future street plan for that neighborhood that shows where the missing streets will be. And because we're conferring the benefit of higher density, those property owners will be able to afford to build those streets as they redevelop their used car lots into mixed-use developments. So I'm expecting that the fine-grained street planning will accompany the mixed-use designations in the proposed comp plan, and that we also will have a housing affordability and strategy that's congruent with that. We hope with inclusionary zoning allowed by the next legislature, time for us to complete the plan. So, in other words, we have a chance to get it right in terms of all these goals converging in these transit corridors, and these two bureaus work wonderfully well together, but we need them to work wonderfully well together as well as PDC and Housing Bureau to make sure that we have that whole set of issues collaborated.
So, I hope I'm misunderstanding this chart. The color bar is...
Each of the geographies are the colored bar, so these are the district coalition boundaries.
But that's the share of projected households is the colored bar?
The colored bar is the share of projected households.
And then the black line
The black bar is the proportion of investment from the TSB.
So I've really appreciated the attention to equity and the discussion of East Portland. However, this chart seems to show that we still haven't come close to allocating the funding where the households are going to be.
Well, in this case, both in East Portland and in Southwest, we're investing more than where the projected growth is coming. So the black bars are showing that we're remedying deficiencies, essentially. So what we're doing is the black is showing that there's deficiencies in East Portland and Southwest that merit our investment beyond the growth that they're projected to receive. But I think it is very important. We had to say no to a lot of people to achieve that, and so that will be something you'll be hearing in terms of feedback from a whole variety of players, that this was not an easy thing to have this level of determination against.
Yeah, sure. I'm glad I was wrong, and well done. It's even better. It shows perfectly clearly that we're doing the right thing. Okay. When we when we established the Office of Equity and Human Rights, and that ordinance said that it would require disproportionate spending in underserved areas to get everybody up to equity. So this really mirrors that. It would be, at some point, we need to fund neighborhood involvement, community engagement, to make it catch up and to get to parity. And yeah. So, Council, I'll just give you a heads up that even though we won't be able to do it in this year's budget, ONI is going to be coming with a plan for that.
All right, and so the last one is a essentially taking those two growth and investment together into a spending per future user. And so it's showing a proportion of the TSP against the projected number of people in those locations. So you're able to see sort of proportionally the cost per user or spending over the 20-year period.
It's not annual spending.
This is not annual spending, I wish. Yeah. But this is able to be able to, as a quick reference, to kind of understand where would the proportional investments are going.
And the high number for Southwest is reflective of the fact that Southwest is kind of this kind of an expensive neighborhood to do business, given the topography, et cetera.
Yeah, it doesn't include Southwest Corridor because that's an investment by others, so this is just city investment. It does include a portion of the cost of the Ross Island Bridgehead, so that's one of the larger costs there. So that is part of the why that number is large. Only the local match proportion for that. So there'd be a little bit of funding, but not relative to that bigger, the amount of those bars that we're showing in orange on that earlier slide are not shown in this. Yeah. I think that's the, it's not. So one of the, I forgot, just keep coming. So actually the part that I think is, I can't believe I thought we were done, that I actually think is one of the most exciting innovations of this round of the TSP is that we created these new citywide transportation programs and included them sort of explicitly within the TSP as very, very important investment packages. And this is specifically trying to find a way to bundle and cluster and make more efficient the expenditure in those small improvements that really are the most, frankly, often the most important to community residents and to local businesses. This is those smaller investments that are hard to get grant funding for. They're harder to reach out to broader statewide funding packages because they're too small for that scale of funding, right? So by clustering them together, we hope that we can try to start creating a whole sort of series of investment programs. And so if you go to the next slide, you'll see some examples of what those are. These are the things that are honestly the things I think we all know and love as sort of key elements. These are things like safe routes to school, high crash corridors, the pedestrian network elements, alternative street design on those streets that may not be able to have full improvements, the completion of the bikeway network, and there's a couple more even on the next page. Neighborhood greenways, focusing in again on what Susan was really pushing on in terms of transportation demand management and parking. Very specifically helping with those, and then investments in transit priority and freight priority and overall transportation system management, making sure that we are, those high-value trips of transit trips and freight trips are rewarded as they're heading through the system.
So how did you decide on the allocation for the amount of funding? I'm looking at $24 million for bikeways versus $9.5 million for transit and $9.5 million for freight.
I'll let Mark.
The main way that we did the estimate was looked at when we were doing the R Street conversation, how much money we were allocating in that conversation toward these types of improvements. So if we looked at like how much we were allocating to high crash or pedestrians improvements, we just tried to carry that forward. There were a few of those categories that we didn't have, like freight and I think maybe some of the TDM stuff that wasn't included in that. And so for those, we used kind of just general estimates based on some of the other revenue streams. We can provide a lot more information, detail on that too.
Well, yeah, particularly on freight, because we just had the discussion of economic development and remembering that there were $500 million in freight improvements in the North Reach plan. It seems like this is kind of a low number.
Yeah, and maybe just a couple quick thoughts on that. I mean, first, just on the freight one, the one that's a lot of the big freight projects that are most compelling to the freight community and our freight advisory committee are on the regional transportation plans. So that's part of why you don't see them here. ODOT would own a lot of those. But But I think the one thing that we haven't mentioned, and Art's team's done a really nice job of this, is these programs are really the way that we interact with the public. The public gets it. They're coming in and saying, why can't you do this $500,000 improvement? Why can't you do this $250,000 improvement? So the one thing that I think will really help, and with a lot of the outreach stuff and with neighborhood involvement as well, is they're taking these programs and putting them up onto the internet, making it really accessible so that people will be able to much more easily say, okay, is my project on this list? Where is it prioritized? And see that. And that was one of the big concerns we had in some of the outreach in the TSP. So it's a major process improvement of how we're going to be identifying some of our most effective projects.
And really, I think, you know, the key, as Mark was mentioning, is this starts to reward public involvement where someone is able to see impact at the very local level. They want to see a new crossing happen at where they see there's a safety issue. They bring it to staff. There's a funding stream for that staff to leverage. They're able to make that investment and reward that community member for caring, for stepping forward. Right now, that's a very untenable, very frustrating process, frankly, for staff, because they don't have this pool of resources to be able to say yes. So they're spending a lot of time finding more articulate ways of saying, I'm sorry, rather than being able to say, yes, we will deliver this for you. And so these programs are that method that we can start more and more renewing and rewarding that civic engagement.
Commissioner, there are a number of $10 million plus freight projects on the larger project list that's outside of these smaller programs, specifically to support access to parcels that are opportunity sites for the economic development.
I forgot you said these are the bundled ones.
Yeah, this is the little guys.
Just so you know, the very first thing I got involved in Portland was getting a cross street sign on Capitol Highway, and it got done, and I thought, well, this is great. You can participate
feels so
and get things
good,
done.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. We want to see more of that.
It doesn't make the traffic slow down the way I thought it would, but right. You know, the sign is there.
Right. Exactly. So this is we really think this is the sort of block and tackle game for the city of Portland and for the Transportation Bureau, and we feel like this is where we should be putting ourselves forward, even in the upcoming budget cycles, as a key way of demonstrating that we mean it. We want to invest in these types of improvements.
So. Flag something else. It's both an equity and a mapping issue, and that is one major project that I don't see on this list, at least articulated separately. Maybe it's implicit in one of these, and that is our strategy over the 20-year period for dealing with our 50-plus miles of dirt streets. So how's that proposed to be addressed?
I believe that's an alternative street design. Is the low cost improvements? I believe that's the intention. We may need to make it less wonky sounding to make it.
Yeah, better. I think we might want to be explicit. Might want to be explicit in the plan about what do we expect to do over the 20-year period. Andrew Abey's been doing great work with LIDs lately. Yep. We've increased the rate of effort on LIDs. I think at the current rate, we'll get it done in 100 years instead of 200. That's an improvement, but. You know, what do we expect over the planning period in terms of both strategy and dollars with respect to that issue?
Right. All right, so
just to make you feel better, I assume that was included in alternative streets.
Okay. Okay, good. All right, so I know we're throwing a lot of that at you. One additional slide, and then we're going to get a chance to talk some more. And so this is a very simple way of showing what do we get out of this. So you remember that that trip gap, that triangle at the very beginning. This is showing that the modeling shows that out of the investment package in the transportation system plan, the land use growth pattern that's projected in the comprehensive plan, and the TDM strategies that we believe will need to be embedded in part of this in terms of encouragement and education, that this investment package is able to reduce vehicle trips by 475,000 vehicle trips. So it doesn't get us to where we are today, but it gets us a lot better than we would be if the status quo was where we were progressing. And we really believe that we can achieve that final trip gap through specifically more bicycle mode increase and TDM strategies, because those are the ones that are very, very inexpensive, and we believe there's still a lot of latent demand for those throughout the system. The graphic on the right is one that you're likely familiar with, but it is showing that specifically within a constrained roadway system, if we're able to produce mobility through a variety of outcomes, we can move more and more people across the same facilities with using the same amount of space. The Hawthorne Bridge is, I think, a great example of where that has continued to function over the years by in, increasing the amount of transit use and the amount of bicycle and pedestrian use.
Actually, Art, I don't recall seeing this particular graphic before, and I think it's awesome, and I think we should build like a 3,000-foot billboard over downtown with this graphic on it.
Great. Good. Okay. So I think this is a chance to maybe talk for a little bit, and then we'll shift to the PSC recommendations. Give just a second if there's other feedback, and then are there...
I just have a quick, as we enter into the PSC, talking about how they came to decisions. Going back to, there's a slide that shows all the different plans and the seven outcomes. Each of the planning commission members were really looking at what were they trying to optimize for. And they have, there's the seven outcomes here. Because you do really different things. If you're trying to move freight, as your that's your highest, you know, goal, versus you're trying to reduce carbon emissions, or you're trying to help lower-income families. And each one of you want to do all of those things, but you can't optimize for everything. That's, you know, it doesn't really work that way all the time. So I think as we're looking at the project list and you're getting down into it and you're going to have people coming up and testifying to you about one project versus another, trying to keep in mind what's most important to you in terms of what you're trying to optimize for.
One thing, and that there's this appropriate time to say this, but I think I have to say it somewhere, that we do recognize that not all segments of all streets can be all things to all people. So although, for example, for people movement, we are prioritizing the low carbon modes of people movement, we acknowledge there is going to have to be freight movement, and some segments of some streets are going to be primarily dedicated to that.
Absolutely. Yep. One of the key things about the seven outcomes and the criteria, how they produced, it was really rewarding projects that were able to achieve a whole number of different outcomes simultaneously. So you may not be able to achieve all of them, but those investments that are able to both create prosperity and help with climate and help be very cost effective were rewarded for being able to achieve multiple fronts simultaneously.
What's in order for the PSC recommendation?
So we've already talked about several of these. Let me briefly address the project list. You know, the big subtraction was the McAdam streetcar, and again, the two reasons for that: one, sending the equity signal about the need for a capital project in East Portland, also the desire to take a more complete look at the inner ring, so we're not doing McAdam as a standalone project, but compare it with a larger expansion of the system in the inner ring. That freed up, even though that was an $80 million project, it only actually freed up $6 million of money we can point at, and we reallocated that to active transportation projects in East Portland and Southwest Portland that were just the other side of the bubble for the constrained list. So we picked the next projects of merit and moved those forward. The studies to say what those should be are intended to be timed to inform the 2018 RTP project list. So this is not, you know, a 10-year figure it out. This is a pretty short-term deliverable to inform the next regional project list. In terms of policy changes, big emphasis on safety. We injected safety into a number of places in the policies. We included a policy specifically calling out motor vehicle diversion as a way to make neighborhood greenways work, and you're already way ahead of that of us with that, and having directed some pilot projects to do that on neighborhood greenways, so we seem to be in alignment there. A lot of work and discussion, even up to the very last minute, on what we have variously called the transportation hierarchy or transportation strategy, how we order the modes. I think two big changes there. One is we separated the hierarchies for people movement and goods movement, recognizing that they have competing drivers, and trying to put them in one list did not make a lot of sense. And actually, a lot of work in the transportation expert group to see where the conflicts were between that. You know, it tends to manifest as, you know, we can't fit both freight and a bike facility on the same segment of the street. And yeah, really digging into that, happily finds that the places where that's true are a short, enumerable list of things that we have to work on case by case. So there's not really a policy statement about how to sort that out, but a recognition that it's a relatively rare problem when you get into the real world, and we're going to have to work each of those at the project level individually. Within the people movement strategy, we, and I credit the leadership of my colleague Gary Oxman, who's the retired public health officer for the Tri-County region, to inject the concept of vulnerability along with the policy goals. So, you know, we could say, for example, that, you know, in our policy goals, we tend to go, you know, walking, biking, transit. When you look at vulnerability and safety, it's a little different because, yes, people walking and cyclists may be the most vulnerable users, but then hardly anybody gets injured on a light rail car or a bus. So, the, you know, the next safety objective goes somewhere else, not to transit, and trying to sort of weave both those thoughts in. And honestly, we're working on that right up the last minute, and there may be some opportunity for amendments before you guys vote to further refine that, but that was an important part of the conversation. Did I miss anything, Andre?
I would add kind of a challenge that comes out of the comp plan and came from the Portland plan, and there was this idea of equity, and you've heard Leah talk about how equity has been integrated into delivering, you know, a comp plan, but more explicitly a transportation plan, and how that concept. And it's not a challenge to the streetcar saying, we're not going to do streetcar. It's saying, what is the priority first? You can still do streetcar, but can you look at capital improvements in parts of the city and where can we start first and what can we do next? And the concept of can we do multiple objectives, as Art talks about, and achieve multiple objectives with capital projects so that we not only build good capital projects, but we achieve affordable housing, we get prosperity, we get people to their jobs, we complete neighborhoods, and we do all those things with a project versus just saying we built a capital project and got transit. And the challenge, I think, is how do we do all those things in the next 20 years? And we can build streetcars. We're just saying, is that the first priority, or is there another priority? And it may not be streetcar, it may be something else, or it may be streetcar. But how do you integrate this issue of equity with all the other objectives in terms of economic development, housing, the environment, and transit? That's really the challenge of a transportation project.
Before we head into next steps, which is kind of the direction, are there other thoughts on all those maps and pieces? Are there pieces of information that you were wondering about that wasn't included? I think we were pretty exhaustive in what we brought to you, but and certainly expect that you'll have probably referenced them in the coming weeks and days and may have more questions. We're happy to go into more detail on any of those. Before we kind of head into the sunset, I want to make sure that gave you a moment to think more about this.
What were some of the most controversial things, and what were things that you didn't put in the plan that caused angst on the Planning and Sustainability Commission and or in the community?
I think one of the challenges was by using a constrained funding scenario and by specifically evaluating the projects. There were projects, some of them that are popular, but didn't get as far up, or you know, didn't get up as far up as they otherwise would be based on solely on a popularity basis, and so that was hard, I think, for some people to hear that even though it's a good project that is would produce a benefit to a certain individual or a set of individuals, it didn't have the same widespread benefits that we were looking for in terms of top priority projects. And so that was, I think, hard. In particular, oh, good.
So let me just ask the Planning and Sustainability Commission. Yeah. You went through the priority list and evaluated them against the criteria. So if we get 50 people showing up advocating for Project X, I'm assuming that your recommendation is say, sorry, we've done the prioritization, this is what it is, rather than yes,
and
you showed up at the last
minute. We did not make big changes to that list. I mean, really, the only thing was spending the extra money that you know was available after we removed the McAdams streetcar. And I'll give credit to the Bureau and to Peter Hurley specifically for the prioritization process they led using the transportation expert group and the neighborhoods. I mean, they did such a good job with that it's really defensible, and we didn't feel the need to muck with it in any major ways.
Commissioner, it's important to note that public support is one of the criteria that we adopted. So public support can be enough to lift something above something that might be close to it but slightly above it in terms of the other criteria. I'd analogize it to when you're talking about whether somebody's in the Baseball Hall of Fame, you look at the statistics, but as Bill James said, you also look at, was the guy really famous?
Right.
So, but and that's been done. So,
oh, yeah. So
we may get people coming in saying we've made a mistake, and I'm hoping then we will have staff ready to say, yes, actually, we did make a mistake, or no, this is why it was further down.
Right. And I think in particular, the demonstrations of public support, you know, to really demonstrate public support, it's not just one voice talking loudly. It's multiple voices saying we all agree. The Neighborhood Association has concurred. You know, sort of variety of levels. And so those projects that were perhaps on the bubble between the constrained and unconstrained, or on the bubble between the first 10 years and the second 10 years, did move based on that feedback, in part also because it demonstrates a willingness to collectively work to deliver those projects and the possibility that there might be leverage from private institutions and other partners to help fund these projects. We are an enterprising bunch within the transportation industry. We don't have enough money on our own, and so knowing that we're going to need to have LIDs, for instance, including other entities, is key information. So if we hear from a major player that they really believe they want to co-invest in this, that's going to make that project move higher.
I would just add real quickly that the unbundling, I mean, this was a list that went through some transformations, but the unbundling of some of the bigger projects to get to some of the smaller projects addressed, and you can help me here, I think it addressed, from what we heard and staff, I think PBOT did an amazing job of addressing many of the concerns, because the initial list were big projects and people couldn't see inside. And so kind of breaking those apart and saying, where is my project? And either it's on the list or not, help give some clarity and transparency, transparency to the list for the public.
And that's certainly manifesting itself even in this year's budget preparation process. Leah has been hearing me push very hard for the need to invest in the programs, even in the near years before we may be successful in additional funding, to demonstrate that we're following through with our intention as we laid out in the transportation system plan, that we need funding streams to be able to follow through on those small investments. So that's something that I think is key as we're heading through the adoption, is to show that we mean it and we're going to be delivering on those smaller investments.
One thing to maybe note, to tie back to your discussion last week, is we did also remove a number of projects. As the thinking on Hayden Island evolved, there were a couple projects that were originally in the list designed to support annexation of West Hayden Island that were pulled out of the list as the commission and the council's position evolved. So you may hear about that as well in terms of from the port.
All right. Courtney Duke, who's been a steadfast carrier of the TSP for many years, is here to make sure you understand kind of what's next, where are we heading from here, and make sure that you're clear on what's in the package that will be coming to Council in the coming months, and what is now heading to the Planning and Sustainability Commission.
Hi, thank you. So what we just talked about, the goals and policies, the project list, and the finance plan, we have now termed stage one of the TSP update. And so that's what you're seeing today and talking about today. So we went through the finance plan, the policies, and the goals, and the projects and programs. And that's also what some of you know as task four, as a part of our periodic review order. So we've been working closely with that. The next stage, which you can sort of see in this blue square in the middle, is what we're working on right now. And that is a part of what's called task five, the implementation of the comp plan, and again, we're calling TSP stage two. And so we just released a discussion draft on October 2nd, and it includes a bicycle and street design classification descriptions and mapping changes, partly to implement the work that we did with the greenways and the civic corridors, as well as incorporating the bicycle plan of 2010. As we've talked a lot about, we have additional transportation demand management policies and working with the zoning code projects to get that into the code. We have additional performance measures, both in the policy document and looking again at code. We made modifications to the street vacation policies and have now created street vacation code language. So that's going to be in Title 17. We are updating our studies list.
Let me just interrupt you there. As you know, I'm really quite concerned about street vacations, and putting it in Title 17 takes it away from the Planning and Sustainability Commission.
No. Still, at this point, the process is still going through Planning and Sustainability Commission. That's a separate process.
Okay. So I would like a separate briefing on that and a discussion.
I
colleagues, my concern is that the language in the comprehensive plan seems too vague to me, and that we need to be really directive that public right-of-way is really precious and we don't give it up lightly.
Correct. And again, we feel that the changes we've made to the code make it actually stronger and that it's actually the code language, but we definitely want to talk with you about it.
Yeah, I appreciate knowing that this is going to be actual code, which there hasn't been in the past, which is great. The code should be directed by the comprehensive plan language, and so currently I'm not seeing that.
Okay. Yeah, and the direction was from city attorney to put it into the code, and so that's one reason we moved that direction. Okay. So we updated our studies chapter, again, based on some of the additional studies that Planning and Sustainability Commission directed us to, as well as just studies that we know we need to meet the growth, as well as studies that came out of some of the changing of the projects. We're updating master street plans, mainly to incorporate already adopted plans that we've done. And then we're needing to modify some of our objectives in the transportation system plan to conform with the new comprehensive plan direction, an example being some of the diversion that Chris had talked about. So again, why are we doing this part of the update? Well, again, it's part of the requirements to meet periodic review. We want to implement the new directions and removing language in the TSP so it is in conformance with the comp plan. We want to incorporate a bunch of adopted plans that we've done since 2007, which we did the last update. And then we're supporting the Bureau of Planning Sustainability Task 5 zoning projects, both the mixed use and the institutional zoning. Again, that's where some of the TDM language code will be. And then again, modifying our city code to implement the comp plan. So again, the discussion draft went out on October 2nd. Some of you may have gotten some emails from constituents concerned that that's what you were looking at the November 19th hearing, and that is not correct. So what you see on the next page is just sort of the timeline of that update, where we are asking for public comment right now through the end of next week. Then we'll produce what's called the proposed draft. And then we have planning sustainability in January, February, and March at this point is what we're scheduled. And there's nothing scheduled yet at City Council. And then, not to be completely finished with TSP, we'll do what we're calling stage three. This is outside the comprehensive plan process, what Eric alluded to at the beginning. And that will be, that's what we call it, post-comp plan adoption. So it's repackaging the TSP, having more geographic-specific strategies and other sections. So again, it includes more the bike parking that we've been talking about to put into it. The geographic strategies are related to our districts and the plan and the pattern areas and how we're going to align those. Additional street classification changes. Looking at our modal plans, we have a variety of modal plans inside the TSP, but we also have master plans for a lot of those modes, so we're trying to figure out how the best way to identify those. There might be additional modifications as a result coming out of stages one and two that we're not aware of yet that we might need to make changes. And then a big lift is reformatting the document and the website to really make it a usable, user-friendly document for both staff and citizens. So that's what our next step will be. We're hoping to have, we're required by the region to be done with stage three by December 2016. So that's our goal.
So Courtney, you have been the keeper of this for a very long time. I really appreciate this. I can see awards galore coming down the pike for the way this is presented. It's so much more transparent than when I was involved 20-some years ago. People can disagree maybe with elements in it or want some tweaks, but it's very clear what you're proposing and why, and so I'm really thrilled with it. Thank you to your whole team.
Yeah, it's really well done. Other requests for follow-up other than the ones that's already articulated here? For all the time you dedicate, not only in the commission meetings itself, but to be here with us and help guide us through this. So look forward to more. We'll see you next week, right? Do we have another one next week?
Yes, next week is the land use. also just maybe convey to the rest of the council our conversation yesterday. At the mayor's request, we're looking into an additional hearing in December that would potentially, we're exploring options in inner northeast Portland for an additional hearing. And I don't know if we've exactly finalized it, but we were looking at December 8th potentially. So if you could look at your calendars over the next week and get back to us on that.
Is that an evening meeting?
Hasn't been settled, but probably.
Yeah, I think to the extent that we can do evening meetings, that would be good. Yeah.